And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this snowy Wednesday, April 2nd. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our Ag Director Bridget Riedel, and we've got some moderate to heavy snow pushing into parts of the area, stretching from about White Earth to just around the Detroit Lakes area through Barnesville. We're seeing some moderate to heavy snowfall here in the FM area. Also some moderate snow out around Valley City. And taking a look at road condition reports, Sargent County still no travel advised, and points westward of there, we're looking at pretty poor conditions as well. Conditions will continue to deteriorate as we head into the afternoon, as we're going to see more and more of these heavier bands of snow pull into the area. So up around your neck of the woods, Bridget, doesn't look too bad right now, but there's more snow moving in from the south.
And will be, it looks like. And really, for the road report, I mean, I know that's important to a lot of us. I have to get on the road later today as well. And a lot of the highways in the state look wet. That's going to be a problem if things change as far as temperature and drops below freezing. There is an icy stretch that's probably around Valley City up towards the Cooperstown area that's being reported. And then there's also, as you said, Sargent County still has no travel advice. Things must be really a disaster in Sargent County at this point is what I'm afraid of.
Yeah, they saw and continue to see heavy snow in and around the Sargent County area, and that's the reason for the very poor travel. Now, again, our temperatures should remain right around the freezing mark, Bridget, even through the overnight hours, so I'm not looking at any of this really freezing, but as these heavier bands do move through from Lakes Country into the valley, we will see some of that snow start to pile up, especially on the secondary roads and not the main thoroughfares. Although even with the heavier snow bands like we're seeing right now, let's see, dial in radar here, just to the west of DL, Lake Park, through about Barnesville, those areas about ready to see some very heavy snow where we could see those snow the snow pile up even on the main thoroughfares. So just keep in mind that as these bands come through, we're going to see some pretty slippery travel through the evening commute. So although it started out kind of quiet, things are starting to go downhill as expected. And that'll continue to be the case if you're going out and about today. Most of the main highways are wet right now, but again, those will be deteriorating as we head into the evening hours. We're looking at temperatures right now in the low 30s across the area, and that's about where they're going to stay, with northeast winds at about 20 to 25 and a little gusty at times. And as snow winds down overnight tonight, we'll drop down to a low near freezing with a northwest wind 20 to 30. Additional snowfall, we've seen about 2.5 here in the FM area. We'll see about an additional 4. Some spots could pick up a little bit more than that. And then Thursday, we'll quiet things down. Upper 30s, a peak or two of sunshine, but don't expect a lot. And then another light band of snow could push into the area as we head into Friday late in the day with highs in the upper 30s. And then the weekend, we'll see a little more sunshine with highs around 40. Bridget, the good news is not this coming weekend, but the following weekend, we're getting very strong indications we will have temperatures in the 60s. So there's something to look forward to.
Ground's been warming up. It's not going to take long to melt what we do have for snowfall at this point. And also a reminder to those who are out traveling today, please feel free to send us your road reports. We'd love to hear what's happening where you are. And you can reach us on the JLA insurance phone line, 701-293-9000. So feel free to dial us up. Let us know what's going on out there. You can also send those updates to weather or ag at flagfamily.com. And as always, we look forward to you following us or catching up. If you missed an episode, you can do that by looking at our Facebook and YouTube pages. We are known as WDAY, Weather and Ag in Focus. Again, YouTube, Facebook, as well as Acres TV. And we'll be looking forward to a lot of things with Acres this year. In fact, just last week, I got the invitation to their field day. So we don't even have a crop in the ground yet, and folks are already thinking ahead about what are those field day opportunities going to look like that we're going to, and so much more. So there's going to be a lot of going on this summer, including our Here We Grow project, and we're going to talk a lot more about that tomorrow. Tomorrow's a big day. It's kind of a the kickoff to the summer season, and that's because of your weather special, Dean.
Yeah, we've got our spring and summer outlook with myself, Gary Lezak, and Bridget, and we'll be running down exactly what this spring and summer entails. Will it be a wet spring? Will we have drought conditions? Is it going to be a warmer than normal spring and summer? We'll have all those answers for you. Kind of break down some specific dates like Memorial Day, 4th of July, what's another bit? WeFest, stuff like that. If you have any specific dates in mind that you would like us to break down for you, shoot us an email, weather@flagfamily.com, and we'll include that in tomorrow's show as well. So just this storm right that we have right now, Bridget, when this cycles back through, maybe not the next cycle, but the cycle after that could be very interesting, because this same storm, not only producing the snow here, but it's producing a major severe weather. Well, not yet, but it's expected to produce a major severe weather outbreak from about Paducah down through Little Rock, where not only are they going to get severe weather with the possibility of some strong tornadoes, but they're expecting, and we don't want this later in the cycle as we head into June, but they're expecting anywhere between 5 and 10 inches of rain throughout much of the Ohio Valley. So flooding rains. And again, figure, let's see, what do we got? 84 days from today, we're looking at later in June that this system comes through. So that'll be interesting to see what happens when that comes through in a couple more cycles. And that's another thing we'll be kind of hitting on in our LRC special tomorrow, is some of the bigger storms that we've had this winter. And we really haven't had any big storms. We've had big rainstorms, especially the one in November where we had quite a bit of rain. The next two cycles, that didn't bring a whole lot of moisture, but it is this cycle. This is the system that we had in November. And there was two in November that brought us substantial precip. The next one is coming in later this month. So it'll be interesting to see, again, how this unfolds in each recurring cycle as we head into spring and summer. But that is what gives us hope for alleviating some of the drought conditions over parts of the area. But then again, you don't want too much of a good thing where you're getting 5 to 10 inches of rain in 2 days either.
Well, right now we are getting reports from quite a few folks, and a couple of things. First of all, thank you to Dave out at Lake Franklin. He said they are pushing 4 inches of snow out there. So there's one report that's going on. I would say I'm probably in that 4 to 5 inch range myself right here. And then a reminder from John, if you're feeling free to call in with road reports, feel free to turn your headlights on. That's also a good point, because remember, even though you have your daytime running lights on, your taillights might not be activated. So go ahead, turn those on to active so that you make sure your vehicle is well seen on the highways. But yeah, there's a few folks out traveling yet, and just want to make sure that we have safe passage everywhere we're going. I can tell you through South Dakota, Roberts County was a lot of not great yesterday. It probably hasn't improved tremendously today. And as per usual, the only spot it was tremendously icy was right around Summit, South Dakota. None of us are surprised. Every time I go through Summit, it's usually something horrendous going on there. One thing that won't be horrendous, though, the Bison are going to D.C. Our national championship football team from NDSU is headed to the White House on April 9th. They will have an opportunity to have a sit-down with President Trump, as well as with Secretary of the Interior Doug Burgum, and so much more. Look for them and know that PetroServe USA, the Hot Tub and Sauna store, as well as Roe and Joe Junk Haul and Removal, is sponsoring the chance for them to go on out to Washington, D.C. and be recognized as national championships. I did have some folks ask me why I wouldn't sing Hail the Bison on the air yesterday, and that is best left for tailgating. But many of you know it. Feel free to message me the words. I know you're singing along in your head right now as we speak. So, yeah, I'll save that one for later.
Some not appropriate wording?
This is a family show. We're going to keep it that way.
Gotcha.
that's my plan. Yeah. So on technology front, John Deere, we always talk a lot about John Deere, but frankly, it's because I get so much information from them. So, hey, if you are a fan of Case IH, get them to step it up. I'd like to hear more from Case as well as Fendt and other tractor companies too. But John Deere is bringing new innovation to one of their round balers. Well, actually, their whole series of balers. So we've talked a lot about being able to do more things autonomously or with auto steer. One of the things that you can do with these tractors is certainly put that tractor over the windrow of hay. So you go out to a field, you mow it or swath it, and then all of that hay gets pulled into rows that you can go down and bale. Well, you put the front wheels of the tractor over that windrow and let the tractor just follow along. The baler has enough sensitivity to it and automation that it knows to slow up so it can make the bale faster, or slow down because it's taking in a lot of material at one time. And that way, it regulates the size of the bales. They have gate and speed automation. There's also better stopping when the bale is of right size to kick it out. Used to be you had to go out and make a lot of adjustments. People got their arms and hands caught in belts. There's plenty of farmers around who are missing some limbs, compliments of older balers. That doesn't always happen as much anymore. Not only can you still use twine, but you can use net wrap, and there are even sprayers, if you will, some nozzles on balers that will spray a preservative on the hay so that it will last longer. This is some of the innovations going on with big round balers, and for those of us who've thrown small squares, I'm okay with round bales. That just means I get to be in a tractor to move them. It's a lot easier than moving some of those squares around where as a kid. Just a thought. All right. Speaking of hay, someone who is well familiar with it is a veterinarian, and that would be our guest coming up today, Dr. Emily Fox. She's with the Ashley Veterinarian Clinic, and Emily should be joining us after we have a chance to listen to markets. When we do, we want to talk about rabies and dehorning. And Addison in the control room is terrified what she's going to be bringing for visual aids today. I promise. Well, I can't promise anything. We're going to see where it goes. So we'll be back with Dr. Fox. While working on things in the shop or in the house today, maybe you're thinking about, is my internet slow? Maybe I've got to get some paperwork in for taxes. Am I doing it so that no one's going to interrupt that and cause a wipeout of my information or hack me and steal things? Well, I've got someone who can help with that, and that is Chris over at Tech Support Farm. You're going to want to give Chris a call. He can help you with your technology. He can help to make sure things are safe, transmitted between you and the places it needs to be without someone intercepting your information. He does a fantastic job of focusing on farms and agribusinesses, so give him a call, Chris at techsupportfarm.com. You can reach him there. We have our returning veterinarian today, and always good things to talk about with Dr. Emily Fox of the Ashley Vet Clinic. Emily, have you guys been getting snow, or is it tapered off for you so far?
Yeah, the roads are pretty bad. It's just very slushy and very wet here, not the usual snow we get here. But it's quite wet, and the roads are pretty bad right now.
So even though Addison gets nervous about some of this specimens or things you have to show, the rest of us adore it. But I don't know if there's much you can share today about rabies. You know, one of the reasons this came up was, honestly, the TV show 1923 showed someone being bit by a wolf who was rabid and then having to go through rabies shots of the 8 injections or 10 injections in the stomach. All right, let's talk about what rabies is, and we don't hear much about it. Is it still a concern amongst livestock or pet owners?
Absolutely. It's still a huge concern. And despite the fact that rabies is pretty rare in this country, that being said, actually, the reason that I thought you wanted to talk about rabies is because there was a rabies death, I think a couple of weeks ago or maybe a month ago, that was reported in a Michigan resident seeking treatment in Ohio. So actually, this is the second time that I've seen that this has been recorded. There's probably been more times, but this person had actually received an organ transplant from somebody who was rabies positive and actually contracted rabies in that manner. And that's happened a couple times now in the literature, so it's kind of becoming a problem. So that's something to consider as well, is that rabies can be spread through an organ transplant.
I had no idea that had been the situation. So hold on. You're saying that rabies can spread if you have an organ transplant, donation, etc., but there's no test to know that it could be there unless the donor somehow is able to let you know that that's happening?
rabies is actually incredibly hard to test for, even in animals. So actually the only real way that we can confirm 100% that an animal was rabid is to either wait for it to die or to euthanize it and to send off the body and, well, the head, basically, so that the brain can be evaluated. They have to find certain hallmark lesions in the brain. It's actually very, very hard to test for rabies. I'm not 100% clear as to why that is, but they don't seem to be able to do any real testing for it. And the only 100% way to test for it would be that, although it's usually diagnosed based off of clinical signs because of the way that rabies suspects present and a quick progression to death. Rabies eventually is universally fatal you can't be treated. It's universally fatal.
Okay, so no matter what you do, somehow this is going to affect you long-term as fatality.
Well, so if you are bitten by a rabid animal and you receive the shots right away before the virus can become symptomatic and before the virus can actually start replicating in your body and take hold, then you'll be fine. You'll survive. I've been exposed to rabies before. I am already vaccinated. But if you don't get that treatment, what they call post-exposure prophylaxis, which usually includes a series, now it's 3 shots, it used to be 8, and now sometimes it's even 2, depending on why you're getting it and where the location is. And then sometimes 2, if it's a quick-moving lesion where they think the vaccine might not have time to work, they will actually put human rabies immunoglobulins, so special immune cells that have been grown to rabies, they'll put them in the lesion, in the bite. They usually do that, like if a child gets bit on the face, and that's because, unfortunately, rabies climbs up the nerves. So the way that it works is it starts wherever you get bit, and then it will climb your nerves and eventually go up to your brain and affect your brain. But if they have a bite closer to their brain, there is less time before that progresses. Rabies can take a very long time to progress, like several months. However, the last 10 days are usually when they show symptoms. And actually, the last 10 days are the only times most animals are infectious. There's a few exceptions where they want that range to be a little longer. So, for example, if a dog is to bite a human and the dog does not have proof of vaccination, which I can talk about in a second, because there's a lot of really good reasons to rabies vaccinate your animals. But let's say a dog bites a human and there's no history of rabies vaccination. Generally, the choices that the owner is given are, we can quarantine your dog for 10 days or you can euthanize it now and test for rabies. And the reason is, even if the dog had rabies, if you quarantine a dog for 10 days and it does not die, it was not spreading rabies at the time that it bit someone, because they only spread the disease usually for less than 10 days before they die. And so essentially they'll have you quarantine them. Now, the state of North Dakota, as well as most states, reserve the right to require either the quarantine or the euthanasia of said animals at the owner's expense. The other thing is, you're supposed to quarantine a dog that is bitten by an animal of unknown rabies status if that animal's also not vaccinated. So let's say your dog is unvaccinated, gets bitten by a skunk. Technically, you are supposed to quarantine your dog for 6 months. So it can be really expensive. It can be really complicated, time consuming, but it's also super risky. The thing I always run into is farm cats, right? Somebody has a million farm cats and their grandkids are around, they're petting them, and one of them gets bit. That's a really unnecessary risk. In my opinion, that's actually incredibly irresponsible. I'm sorry to get on a soapbox about this, but it's something that really bothers me. At the end of the day, if you can pet an animal, you should rabies vaccinate it. I don't care if you never want to see a vet for any other reason, but if an animal can be touched, especially by a child, it should be rabies vaccinated because this disease is serious. The rabies shots are no joke. They really hurt. Some people have very strong immune reactions to them, and they're really hard on children and often not recommended for small children if you can avoid them. So the nicest thing you can do is just rabies vaccinate animal. If an animal is rabies vaccinated, the rabies vaccine is effective. It's not like an animal is going to be rabies vaccinated and bite somebody and they're still going to get rabies. That's never happened. Now, the caveat is you need to keep up on your rabies vaccinations because the titers can fall low. I actually have to get my blood drawn on a routine basis to check that my titers are still good and that I don't need more booster. And actually, your animals should either be re-rabies vaccinated, or some people will titer animals if they're really against vaccination. I usually just recommend re-rabies vaccinating your animal and keeping on the schedule recommended by your veterinarian. But rabies vaccination is incredibly important.
And Emily, I've got a couple of questions to piggyback off of that. Are there any laws in place? I mean, when I had my dogs, I mean, we always kept up on vaccinations just because that's what you should do. Are there any laws in effect where you have to have your animals vaccinated for rabies?
So some states actually legally require proof of rabies vaccination, as do a lot of communities for dog licensing. My understanding of the law in North Dakota is that while technically it's not in the century code as being like, oh, if you're going to get a ticket, if we just find out your dog is not vaccinated, if your dog is not vaccinated and it bites somebody, you are in a lot of trouble. You're going to have it quarantined at your expense. You potentially are going to have your dog euthanized. Like if it bites a child on the face and they feel like the rabies infection could move too fast to wait for those results, you could have your dog forcibly euthanized. There's a lot of really good reasons not to do that. So the law does have a North Dakota Century Code. I actually looked it up to make sure that I had the right statute. It's 23-36-01, if anyone is interested. But there is an entire chapter of the Century Code of North Dakota that is devoted to rabies control because this is a humongous public health risk. And while usually maybe one or zero people in the U.S. and certainly less than 10 per year die of rabies, in the developing world, it's still a huge issue. Tens of thousands of people die of rabies. It's still a major issue. Areas where they have street dogs and unvaccinated dogs running around because there's no real good way to control rabies without owner compliance. And you know, it is a wildlife vector disease. That's our major issue in the U.S. But in countries where they have a lot of canines that are not owned by anyone, my understanding is particularly India and parts of South America, and actually I think parts of Mexico as well, if I recall, there is quite a serious rabies risk still. In fact, some areas, if you look at the U.S. State Department page for travel, some areas, it's still recommended that Americans get rabies vaccines before traveling to certain areas just because of the high risk of the local street dogs.
Wow. Okay. I have a whole list of questions over here, Emily. Things like, what animals can carry rabies? What do the symptomology look like? How do they spread between? And we haven't even gotten to talking about dehorning cattle and goats. We're going to get there. We're going to do that after we come back. One thing that I so appreciate is whenever we have Dr. Emily Fox from the Ashley Veterinary Clinic join us, she comes so well prepared. She's got century code and everything in front of her. So we're going to continue this conversation after bottom of the hour news. Welcome back to Weather and Ag and Focus. Maybe you are grinding hay today, pushing a little snow out of the way, or so much more. We're glad you're here and listening to what we have to say today, along with our guest, Dr. Emily Fox. We're talking about rabies. So my question, Emily, is what animals can carry rabies? We've talked about some commonalities, dogs, cats, cattle.
So technically, I believe any mammal can get rabies because, you know, it's not that species specific of a disease. However, the common replicative hosts, the hosts that kind of keep it going in the environment, are different. So like cattle can get it, but they tend to be a dead end host. It's rare for a cow to transmit it to another cow, for example. Dogs too, although yes, they'll transmit it to one human or a couple people. The primary hosts that do the most transmitting and can keep the virus alive in the environment tend to be raccoons, skunks, and bats in this country, depending on where you're living. So there is a little bit of a slightly different rabies variant that you see east of the Mississippi, like where I'm from. We tend to associate rabies with raccoons. If anybody's ever seen the movie The Great Outdoors, I believe there's a rabid raccoon in that movie as well. There's a lot of kind of raccoons, or foaming at the mouth raccoon, that must be rabies, right? In the case of this part of the country, like west of the Mississippi, particularly kind of our area, it actually is more likely to be skunks. We see more of the skunk variant. Down south, they see more bats, although bats are always a huge human health concern. You know, bats are a major public health concern. People don't realize, but if you're bitten by a bat, you may not know. Their fangs are so small, you may not really feel anything. You may think it just brushed you. And so a fair number of people get exposed in that manner and don't even know they were exposed. Generally, if it's recommended generally if somebody is left alone in the room with a bat that they should at least consult their health provider, is my understanding. And I know people who did not think the bat bit them, but it touched them physically, who were asked to get rabies post-exposure prophylaxis. And they also say with a baby, because a baby cannot tell you if it was bit, and the fang marks might be so small that you might not see them. Generally, if a baby is left alone in the room with a bat, I believe the recommendation is still that they get post-exposure prophylaxis. So bats are a pretty serious risk factor as well.
So really, the transmission is by bite. It's not respiratory or something like that. It's an oral transmission.
It's usually saliva. The one concern with cattle or horses in particular, right? Let's say you have a baby calf that acts sick, or a horse that's colicking. There was a great exposure story with this. Let's say we're a bunch of horse ladies and we're all at the barn together, like the type of places where I grew up, and we all keep our horses together and there's 20 of us. If sure. somebody's horse seems sure. sick, what are we all going to do? We're all going to go and check in its mouth and see what color its mucous membranes. Is it colicking? What's wrong with it? And then you realize that like 15 people have just stuck their hands in the mouth of an animal that spreads a disease via saliva. Now, if you have open sores on your hands, that's a good way to contract rabies. Generally, anytime you had your hands ungloved in the mouth of an animal that's showing neurologic signs, that is a risk factor. I was taught, and I always teach all of my students, if an animal is showing even vague signs of being not there in the head, neurologic signs, you just put gloves on. You put gloves on before you start the exam. You immediately assess whether the owner has had ungloved contact with the mouth or mucous membranes of that animal. The blood could also transmit rabies, but we don't have as much, you know, technically if I needle stuck myself, for example, while I was taking the blood from the cow, and then I needle stuck myself in the lab when I was trying to do something with the blood, I could also get rabies in that manner. I am not an expert. I think there may be a couple other ways that humans may be able to contract rabies. You know, you saw the organ transplant, for example, but the primary vector is still bites, just because there's that saliva to blood contact that the virus likes to use to get into your bloodstream.
And you mentioned neurological symptomology. That animal looks off. And there's no doubt, I grew up where skunks were a primary vector as well, and people thought about them being aggressive, or you talk about a dog foaming at the mouth. Are those true, or are there other things to look for?
So both. So when we were in school, and this is probably going to sound incorrect, but this is just what we were taught there's the furious form and the dumb form of rabies, that they kind of either present, you know, your typical old yeller foaming at the mouth, whatever. I've actually never seen an animal with that presentation. I always see what they call the dumb form, which is just lethargic, really out of it, doesn't seem all there. You know, for me, the hallmark is mentally, they do not seem all there, but pretty much anything causing lethargy, ataxia, so lethargy being really slow and sluggish, ataxia meaning maybe I don't have full control over my whole body, maybe I'm kind of wobbly. But the other thing that is kind of classical for rabies is what they call hydrophobia, or fear of water. You'll see that these animals won't really go up to drink, they'll stay away from the water tank. That's just kind of a fairly common thing with rabies. They also can be hyperesthetic, so sometimes you'll see their muscles kind of fasciculating and bouncing like this. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you'll see nystagmus as well, which is when the eyes are back and forth in their eye sockets. But the main thing for pet owners or for cattlemen as well is anytime something is acting not right in the brain, as opposed to just acting sick, you know, the eyes don't track, you know, maybe you bring your hand towards their head and they don't blink. That is a time when you want to consider that, yeah, it's probably low on your list of things this could be, but is there a possibility maybe, and should I take some precautions by, you know, gloving up my hands, especially if I have wounds? Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, this time of the year with the amount of emergencies we have and stuff, sometimes I will have a fair amount of wounds on my hands. I'm excessively careful when it comes to things that are neurologic, and you can see rabies in all sorts of animals. I went and looked to find the map of where rabies is because I wanted to make sure I didn't give anybody any incorrect information. And when I was looking, I found out that in Puerto Rico, the primary vector is the mongoose, which I did not know. So there are other animals that can, depending on where you are, also be your main vector. And certainly most animals can get it. It's really uncommon in animals that don't spend a lot of time outside chasing other animals. That's why dogs get exposed so often, right? Because my dogs will definitely fight a raccoon, and they're not going to think about whether it's rabid, which is why it's really important to stay up on your rabies vaccine. But cats definitely get into those situations too, especially cats and skunks. So definitely also consider that, and consider that if you have skunks in your barn, for example, you know, you really want to make sure that they're not in a situation where they're going to be able to corner you and bite you. We did send off one like that for someone once. And the most important thing, if that does happen and you do have a wildlife vector, obviously do not get hurt. But if you do happen to, maybe you actually, in one case, somebody hit it with a shovel and it passed away, for example, just trying to get it off of them. If that happens, it is worthwhile to ask your local public health official or your veterinarian if you should send that animal off for testing. State Lab in Bismarck, as well as North Dakota State University, will also do testing on those. And that is a good way to make sure you haven't been exposed if you think there's an exposure risk.
Emily, as the most prepared vet who answers so many of these questions for us, this is going to sound a little off the wall. when you have to send that animal, or at least the head, in for sampling or testing, does somebody drive it there? Because please tell me we're not mailing heads in the mail to get them to Bismarck in time.
They're definitely going in the mail.
Oh,
they're definitely going in the mail. However, the good news is
you don't
we
know
do
if you
have
don't
a
ask.
Lot of there are a lot of standards about how we can package them, right? So I promise we're not leaving like leaking boxes of rabies brains in the mail. They do have to be packaged in a very specific manner to make sure that they can't leak. I usually triple bag mine. Usually these days I've been sending more and more whole skulls. It's a lot easier. I've had a couple where I've extracted the brain matter and the brain matter has degraded before it got to the lab, and then we get a like they're not sure diagnosis. Well, then everybody has to get PEP, and that's not fun because then everyone has to get shots because we just don't know that it was negative. So the best thing that we can do is make sure that I keep the brain encapsulated as much as possible. There are situations if it's a full grown cow where sending that head is prohibitively expensive, and then I will actually do the decapitation and the brain removal myself, but that's a little bit trickier.
Oh man. Okay. That's, you know, people who were worried about having to use the box that they had to mail stool samples in to be determined if they need a colonoscopy. That ain't nothing on sending a brain. This is fun now. Wow. Okay. We were going to talk about dehorning and also, you know, like doing it in cattle and goats, but I'm going to hold that till the next time we have you on, Emily, because that's going to be something that's going to take a little bit longer for us to discuss. And I know we've only just got a few minutes left. Any reminders to all of us, whether it's with our cattle, our livestock herds, our horses, our dogs and cats right now, things that we should be doing because spring is here, tick season's coming. What are you telling your patients?
Sure. So one thing, get your rabies vaccines updated, really important. And that's if I can say anything about this, it's that this is a huge, messy situation that can really be avoided with a pretty simple shot. And even if you're not a big fan of anything else that we do as veterinarians, please get a rabies vaccine for your animal. That's really important. And it does need to be administered by a vet because we need to have paperwork that says for sure it was administered and administered correctly. That way, if that animal does bite somebody, you can come back and look at that paperwork and be sure that the person is safe. It's really important to public health. In terms of other things we should be doing for spring, don't forget that this is flea and tick season coming up. We are seeing more and more Lyme disease encroaching into the Dakotas. I really don't see it yet in our practice when I test for it, but it's definitely starting to be here. So keep up on the tick prevention. I don't really mind whatever people want to use. I wouldn't recommend any of the products that are over the counter. There's still a few of them. I've seen a couple of really bad reactions in cats to some of the over the counter products. Mm-hmm. And I'd be really, really careful what you use and make sure you're consulting with your veterinarian for that. They're not just trying to sell you stuff. We can just prescribe stuff that's a lot newer and a lot safer due to the way that the law works now. In terms of bovine stuff, you know, people are probably either calving right now or just about to start calving. I'm seeing a lot of bigger calves than I was expecting so far. I think that the cold weather sometimes makes them cook a little better, but there's no clear evidence. The other thing that I'm seeing a little bit is I've been doing a little bit of vitamin A work in a few different herds, and I'm finding more and more that there's more animals than I think there should be that are lower in vitamin A than I'm expecting based on their rations. And I started doing a lot of reading on that, and it turns out that when we've been in as much of a drought as we've been in for the past few years, these animals may be acting off of a long-term deficiency. And so you may want to talk to your veterinarian about whether they think that it's appropriate for you to either do some vitamin testing or potentially add some more vitamin A or even some vitamin E to your ration or potentially to your program, depending on what you're doing. So those are good conversations to have with your vet. Also make sure that you keep your vet involved this time of the year. If you're changing up what you're doing, you know, don't just change it up because you talked to Larry at the Cenex and he said that it was a good idea. You know, when you're talking to your friends, sometimes what works for one person won't work for another, right? We deal with that a lot that, oh, well, that guy's calves look great and this is what he does. So that's what I'm going to do. Well, sometimes he has completely different disease risks than you do. And sometimes you might need something a little different. So this is a great opportunity to work with your veterinarian to make sure that you're doing a really good start to life program for your calves, that if you need to, for your replacement heifers, you're getting good vaccines into them before they go out to breed. All of those things are super important. And we should already be starting to think about what we're going to do to get everybody ready to go out to pasture.
Oh man, Emily had so many great points right there. And just a reminder, your vet's your friend. Make sure you talk to him. I do want to confirm two things that she said, more of a presence of Lyme disease. In fact, the state of Montana just confirmed, and I'm doing this off memory, I believe it was the black leg tick, which is a primary Lyme disease carrier. So that is present in Montana now. And also what you mentioned about vitamin A deficiencies, there have been several things out over the fall and winter. Due to some of the drier conditions we've had, we're seeing less vitamin A due to the feedstocks not carrying it. So just what you said, talk to your vet about adding vitamin A supplements to your cattle rations, even your nutritionalist, and you can have your hay tested for that quality. So, Emily, thank you. You are fantastic.
Thank you.
Every time we bring you on, you have so many great answers. Just really appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Emily. And when we come back, we're going to have a recap on the weather. There's some heavy snow. We've already seen some moderate to heavy snow in the FM area, even heavier snow that is moving in from Lakes Country, moving westward towards the valley. We'll have more on that and road condition report coming up here right after the break. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus, 1:54 in the afternoon. We've got some heavy snow, moderate snow here in the FM area. Some might think it's heavy, but that's we've got some heavy snow from about, let's say, Stockwood down through Sabin and over towards Christine. All of that moving kind of in a northwesterly direction. So that will be here in the FM area, even heavier snow than what we've got now, probably within the hour. Also a band of moderate to heavy snow stretching from Arthur down through Castleton. And going further south, we've got some moderate to heavy snow just let's say just north of the Lidgerwood area, between Lidgerwood and Winemere, those areas receiving some heavy snow. And again, some of the road condition reports that we're seeing is, all right, the no travel advised has been lifted in Sargent County. That's good news, but still very slippery travel Sargent County westward. Some slippery roads there around the Valley City, just north of Valley City area. Looking over into Minnesota, on the Minnesota side, just wet going out of Fargo. But once you get down towards Pelican Rapids, out towards DL, Fergus areas, those areas seeing snow-covered roads. So especially those secondary roads. The main thoroughfares, looking out here at the interstate, it's just wet. But some of those side streets already starting to get some snow and slush on those. So be a little extra careful as we head into the evening. We'll see waves of this moderate to heavy snow that will continue to press up into the area here through the evening rush. So conditions aren't going to get better for evening rush. They're probably going to get a little worse. The good news is, A, ground temperatures are pretty warm, and B, we've got air temperatures right at or just above the freezing mark. So a lot of this is starting to melt, at least on the main thoroughfares. We've got Todd on line one. Todd, you've got a question for us. What's your question, Todd?
Yeah, I got a question for you just from a Curious George listener. You guys at the half-hour break or the quarter-after hour, and then on the Jay Thomas show, you go to the American Ag Network so they can give us the market report. Bridget is a master in agriculture broadcasting. Why don't you just give the ag market reports yourself?
Oh, that's an easy question for me to answer, Todd, because I'm not good at that. Actually, as someone who's, I spent all my time in crop and weed science and ag education, so I'm better at teaching and killing plants than I am at trying to help you market your grain. So I am far better not doing that, and I appreciate your vote of confidence, though. Thank you. I'll just leave that up to those guys that do the market reports every day and are really good at it, and then I will call them to help answer the questions that I don't know.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Todd.
Thanks, Todd.
That's a valid question, right?
It's a great question. Absolutely it is. And we try to do those market reports not only for livestock but for grain throughout the day, because that is important. A lot of farmers get that on their phones now, but if you're busy and you don't get a chance to look at those closing market reports that come to you through email, etc., this is one way to get them, is by listening right here every day. We appreciate that. Thanks, folks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So again, if you're going to be out and about through the evening hours, again, we're going to see bands of this moderate to occasionally heavy snow pull in. Lakes Country is going to get hit the hardest out of this. So areas in Lakes Country, we'll see probably in upwards of 4 to 6 additional inches, probably closer to 6. And in the FM area, we'll probably see an additional 3 to 4. We've already picked up a couple this morning. So it continues to add up. And again, the evening rush hour is going to be a little different than the morning rush. So keep that in mind. Leave a little extra time. So for Bridget, myself, I want to thank everybody for joining us here on Weather and Ag in Focus. Don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show is coming up next.